Hello and welcome again to the Business Made Human podcast sponsored by Investec for your business. Now, in this ever-changing market, it really is crucial for retailers, manufacturers, distributors to have sufficient inventory to service pent-up demand. And today we're going to be discussing market volatility and also how that can affect imports and supply chains. I'm Michael Avery and I'm going to be your host for today.
In a world of numbers and high-powered deals, it's not uncommon to forget the human side of business. The side that's about relationships, support, and the comfort of knowing that someone has your back. At Investec, we do more than interact. We connect to build a relationship that's truly unique through a team of specialists who make it their business to understand yours. That's business made human. Partner with Investec for your business. Investec Bank Limited, a registered credit and authorized financial services provider.
Helping me gain some added insight into the topic is Dr. Greg Klein, Head of Corporate Accounts at Investec for Business, and Dennis Hobson, who is Logistics and Pricing Analyst at Investec for Business. Gents, great to have you on the podcast. Welcome. And let's dive straight in, shall we? Shipping. I mean, any kind of logistics is really the arteries of any economy. But what we've seen through COVID is supply chain issues. In South Africa, we've got our own issues when it comes to port congestion and the like. Perhaps, Greg, maybe you can just kick us off here. What are we seeing when it comes to South Africa's ports? Are we seeing an improvement?
Well, I think, you know, on the port side, we are kind of a little bit reactive as to what's happening in a global sense. You've got China, which has got a zero COVID policy, and we're seeing a lot of shipping disruptions that are coming out of the East. And given that the majority of our inbound volume originates from China, it's discerning. You know, I think that, we've got, given the last years of COVID, we've got quite forward planning in terms of making sure inventory is available.
Yeah.
And so having learned from the disruptions in the past, while we're seeing a lot of our clients have stocked up, you know, we're going into the winter season, but we need to stock up for summer. And so a lot of those orders have already been placed. A lot of those ships have expected to have left port. And we're seeing that alternative suppliers are having to be sourced. So, you know, shipping being an imperfect science, constantly having to balance, you know, where we're able to source goods from and how we're able to fund it. And it just contributes to the overall volatility of supply chain in South Africa.
And, I mean, if you look at this, Dennis, the risk for business as well is if you don't get that balance right, then you can potentially overstock. And we see it in hugely discounted sale items in retailers, for example, if they don't get their seasonal buying right. There's lots of risk here. From your vantage point, what are we seeing in South Africa's ports at the moment?
So from a South African point of view, the biggest thing is inefficiencies, operational constraints. We've also seen the lack of capacity to be able to adapt to handling of larger vessels coming in. You have vessels that omit the ports, which then impacts lead times, impacts predictability of when you will receive cargo, either in your warehouse or into DCs and then onto shelves. You know, and that's also combined with the lack of infrastructure spend. You know, over many years, they haven't really invested in the infrastructure. And we start to see now the inefficiencies coming through.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching a program about the port of Rotterdam the other day, 45 kilometers inland, the biggest port in Europe. Everything's automated. You know, the way they're turning over those big containers, TEUs, that would make your eyes water if you look at us here in South Africa. There's also this issue on shipping prices and costs that have been steadily rising. What are we seeing on that front, Greg?
You know, when you're importing goods into South Africa, it's important to understand what your landed cost of goods are. Mm. And prior to COVID, the freight contribution was roughly 3%. You know, obviously it changes, it depends on the goods that you're importing, but the freight rates have gone 3, 4, 5 times what it was prior to COVID before you were able to get a 20-foot imported from China at around about $1,000 and thereabouts. And today, you know, sometimes you're paying in excess of $10,000. So the freight contribution is excessively high, and we're seeing that a lot of our clients and importers in the market are funding the imports on the back of debt. So when you've got debt funding and you're paying interest against these costs, so the overall costs, they you know, it's difficult to keep on going back and raising additional funding for, you know, the same volume of goods that you're looking to import into a market where it's difficult to pass those costs on to the end consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, when you talk about the overall landed cost of goods, you know, you look back on a 2-year path, and you know, now you're paying 20, 30, 40% in excess of what they were, and the amount of disposable income that's available to end consumers has shrunk. You've got a rising interest rate environment. And so it becomes, again, it's a difficult balance to maintain.
Yeah. And all of that erodes margins. I mean, because ultimately you have got to absorb those increased costs in an environment like this to an extent. How does one manage this, Dennis? I mean, if you look at forward planning in an environment that is so volatile, where prices can change almost overnight, how do you manage this?
I think the big thing is understanding getting your forecasting and your demand planning right. And also being very agile in the sense of having your scenarios planned out in terms of when things do go wrong or you need to make changes, be decisive. And that's also allowed, importers to plan their inputs. So we've seen seasonality changes, in the sense of when importers are actually placing orders to start shipping. So they built in additional lead time. Mm. Now you also avoid then shipping in the absolute peak. So, and that's generally when freight rates increase substantially. So that's one way of trying to mitigate some of the costs. The other side is, you know, when it comes to demand planning and knowing where your demand is sitting, be able to get the goods to those areas or stores. And that also allows you then to be selling it without having to discount and avoid sitting with obsolete stock, because that often erodes the margins and then puts some working capital pressures onto importers. So the other side is to avoid air freighting, especially for retailers. It becomes very expensive from a landed cost point of view. So if that's, you know, if you've planned your supply chain and you have very close relationships with suppliers, you've given yourself enough lead time for production and for potential delays that we need to buffer in these days, you know, you generally can avoid having to go the air freight route. And understanding your different production timelines, as well as then where your demand's sitting for your various product lines. Mm. If you need to cancel orders because you know you're going to be late and they won't be able to sell them when they arrive, then, you know, those are decisions you need to be making too.
I think maybe if I can add, you know, what we've seen is that there's an increased reliance on technology platforms that allow importers to have additional visibility, which they didn't have before. So, you know, what you'd see in the past is that there'd be an order placed on a supplier, and then that would be, you know, sent through to your clearing and forwarding agent, and, you know, importers would be kept updated, whether it's on SMS or fax or email, as to how those imports were progressing. What we're seeing now is that, you know, having a system where you can understand what your forex exposure is, what orders are signed in terms of which forward contracts that you've taken out, being able to know when your supplier handed over the goods, if there's a delay at port, being able to track, you know, your number of sailing days at sea, understanding what goods have been stopped at customs, what's been cleared. And effectively, you know, better supply chain planning on a tech platform allows you to make decisions. So whether it means that you're going to delay a payment to a supplier, or you're going to hold back an order, or you're going to be able to communicate to your end customers as to when goods are going to become available, all of that speaks to a lot more proficient operator type of workings in supply chain. And what we've seen is that those businesses that were more traders have become operators, because while importers, or, you know, there was a heavier focus on marketing and sales, having to manage the supply chain was almost a secondary function, and that's become crucial now in controlling the costs in terms of being able to offer it into the market at consumable acceptable rates.
Yeah.
It's becoming a key differentiator in the marketplace for, you know, for example, an importer that is very has invested a lot in their supply chain and is hands-on and understands the supply chain, often gain a competitive advantage, especially when things go wrong in the market or when we have these disruptions that we have seen.
Yeah.
So, you know, supply chains are helping drive business growth, and they're not just seen as a secondary function, as Greg said, within a business anymore.
I mean, one can understand that, you know, with COVID zero in China, and we see Shanghai going back into lockdown, and you just wonders how much longer this is going to be the new normal for. Then we've got the war in Ukraine. That's obviously disrupting supply chains as well. So it wasn't just this once-off event now. I mean, controlling and managing that supply chain is vitally important. You spoke about, you know, cargo being stopped by customs. And yeah, we know the trade industry and competition minister, Ibrahim Patel, he's adding lots of tariff protection to local producers. So there's this increased focus on what's coming through our ports. How can importers better manage that and ensure that, you know, their 40-foot container isn't just randomly targeted, because that leads to further delays and costs? Any thoughts here, Greg?
So there's an element that's within our control, and there's obviously some of it which isn't. And I think the part that's within your control in direct supply chain understandings is that we almost need to have a relationship. Have a relationship with your clearing and forwarding agent, understand where the relationship sits with customs, and the ability to make a motivation if you're seeing that you've got repeated offences. So repeated stoppages out of a certain port from a certain supplier, being able to put a case together, motivate to customs, and almost flag those suppliers or ports of origin for clearance. Now, there are acceptable stoppage rates. So now we know within our business that if you've got a stoppage rate of more than 3%, then that's out of the norm and that needs to be investigated. I think further to that, the stuff that's kind of out of our control is understanding what the impact of the stoppages are going to have on your supply chain. And it all comes down to cash flow and stock. In terms of cash flow, you've got to appreciate that a lot of importers are paying a deposit when they're placing the order. They then pay a balance when the order is shipped. And so any stoppages are going to have a profound effect in terms of the interest that is being charged and needs to be paid back. So, you know, a cash outlay with a delay of 6 weeks could be quite significant. You know, similarly in terms of stock, having the stock available to put on shelves, you know, a missed sale is a missed sale and it's never recovered. So being able to balance having the facilities that allow for, you know, whether it means that there's volatility in the rand, that you need to have access to additional lines of funding so that you can purchase your stock because the rand has moved from a 14.50 to a 16 overnight, and you know, through to making sure that you're able to pay your transporters and all of these anticipated payments, you know, that timeline shifts. And so the availability of either cash or availability of funding, it needs to line up with your cash flow cycle. And I think that's the difficulty we have to plan for.
Yeah. I just want to add on to that. I mean, you know, using a reputable logistics service provider is, I think, also very critical to your supply chain. And the other side is what we do is we pre-tariff any goods before they even ship. So, you know, for example, if a client is bringing in a new product line, at least they know what tariff heading is, correct tariff heading to be used, if there are any certificates that may be required. And these are just little ways of trying to mitigate some of the risk and delays when goods are imported and are maybe stopped, that you have everything in order.
Yeah, absolutely. Very important. But I think Investec, one of the few banks that not only understands us on the funding side, but also on the critical full value chain of imports and those relationships, which really becomes very important. What about the actual state of the physical infrastructure here? And there's been a lot made in the local press about Transnet opening up its rail to third parties on the 1st of April. It was a bit of a damn squib because of the commercial terms. I mean, 2 years and footstuts and that kind of thing. And we know our ports are pretty much creaking. Is this improving? Do you have confidence that we're on the right track here? No pun intended, Dennis.
Look, I think, you know, Transnet's been through a very tough 2 years. If we just take a step back and look at, you know, the flooding, the riots, the cyber attack. But there have been some positive shoots and sentiment coming out. So at the moment, you know, there is more engagement with the private sector. You know, there's talks of tendering out some of the functions of the port. And what you're going to see there is if there's a successful private-public partnership, you're going to get infrastructure investment. You're going to get best practices coming in. You're going to get skills transfer, which is, I think, critical to our industry. And you're going to get a lot of confidence coming back. So, you know, there's great scope and opportunity to have this public-private partnership. And then, you know, from there you get all these little sub-economies building up, as well as then social upliftment too. So there's great opportunity, I think, going forward if they can get this right.
It is a win-win throughout the economy, apart from potentially previously vested and corrupt interests holding that back. But we are starting to see moves, the likes of Siyabonga Gama, former Transnet CEO, being hauled before the courts recently. I mean, that was a big announcement that the age of accountability is here. I want to build on the public-private partnerships, Greg, potentially into customs as well for SARS, because we also know SARS was hollowed out during the years of state capture. And there must be a role here for the private sector to partner with SARS to help them with their customs clearing and to maybe train on specific product lines to avoid any unnecessary stoppages.
I think, you know, we've been working with some of the accounting and auditing firms who are providing input into that process and working closely with customs. I think in the past it's been quite difficult to build relationships, and there's also been, you know, quite a high turnover of staff there. So to get some type of stability in terms of building those relationships, and I think as Dennis mentioned, you know, the level of trust that has to evolve over time, it's, you know, without having that, I think there's always going to be a little bit of give and get in terms of, you know, customs and private sector. But private sector is what's going to be taking, you know, this country forward. And I think that given that we import over R1 trillion of goods into South Africa, it's important that those relationships evolve over time. And, you know, having a PPP, if it's, you know, if that's where we get to, I mean, that would be the ideal.
Yeah. And I think from an export point of view, you know, if you had efficient port infrastructure right now, I mean, this commodity boom, we could take advantage of that. And that means further inflows into the country. That means additional revenue for, you know, the country as a whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just then gives you momentum and allows a bit more, space for additional spending on various projects going forward. So I think it's absolutely key and critical.
It's a virtuous cycle, isn't it? And it's one thing that S&P mentioned in its recent, surprise upgrade from its outlook to positive from stable, and that was our improving terms of trade. We are in a multi-year commodities boom. If you take anything away from a recent BCI investment conference, is that there are going to be key deficits in key metals for a very, very long time. If you look at the energy transition, if you look at other industrial and base metals, all very good for South Africa, but to your point, we don't get to benefit if we don't get to rail the stuff out the country and get it through our ports. So it really is incumbent upon this this new spirit of public-private partnership to find a way to unlock that, then.
Absolutely. And, I mean, another key sector would be, you know, you get job creation through, especially the agricultural side. I mean, take the citrus industry, for example. You know, they've really increased their global volumes, and you need the port to be supporting that and enabling that we have continued growth. And there's massive development that's come into the country over the last few years. It creates, you know, a lot of job creation. And that then also helps, you know, stimulate economies in your smaller towns and cities too, which is also critical. And we've seen a lot of unrest take place, if we just look at what happened in Kirkwood recently. But, you know, for economy to grow and the country to move forward, we need all the cities to and towns to be operating.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and we know the on-balance sheet model for state-owned enterprises. I mean, it's run its course. There just isn't any more space to gear these entities up anymore. I can't see any other way forward but public-private partnership. Like any relationship, it's going to go through its ups and downs, but at least we are talking. And that's certainly not where we've been for sort of the last 10 years during state capture. So that is a positive. Greg, just as we wrap up, though, how do you help your customers plan through such a volatile environment? War in Ukraine, COVID lockdowns, shipping rates up and down, the currency up and down. Do you just sit down and do lots of scenario planning? I mean, how do you plan for such volatility?
Of course, we do scenario planning. I think it's, you know, we've been through so much volatility over the last 12 years that it's almost come to be expected. And what we've noticed is that the ability to provide a flexible line of funding into a client becomes critical to their ability to operate. So, you know, whether it is fluctuations in freight rates, whether it's got to do with rand volatility, whether it is, you know, debtors which are extending terms on that, just, you know, that debtors book is aging out and we're seeing that clients can't collect the cash depending on which industry it's, whatever the scenario, you know, we know that we had to back the jockey and that the good businesses will survive, but they may need more flexible lines of funding. So just understanding how to plan that against the cyclical nature of various industries and what the circumstance is critical to their survival.
Dennis, any concluding thoughts for importers, for businesses who really should be focusing on their supply chain to consider at a time like this?
So I think the biggest thing that we've seen through our own client base, the ones that have paid attention in terms of how to adapt their supply chain, be proactive in their planning and invested in their supply chain, have really been, you know, they've won in the bigger sense of things, in the sense that they've gained market share. You know, and really not worrying always about just the freight rate itself. You know, it's more about getting your goods landed in the country, and being one step ahead of your competitor, because there's opportunity to gain market share. And we've seen some large retailers do exactly that. And that's really, you know, for them, it's part of their growth strategy. They've, you know, paid the price up front, but reaping the rewards now.
Well, fantastic. It certainly seems to be an opportune time for companies to be revisiting their entire supply chain strategy with all of those holistic components factored in, with a partner who knows the full value chain in supply chain as well. Thank you very much. We're going to have to leave it there. That was Dennis Hobson, logistics and pricing analyst at Investec, and Greg Klein, head of corporate accounts at Investec for Business, talking about how to manage your supply chain through all of this volatility in the Business Made Human podcast, sponsored by Investec for Your Business. I've been your host, Michael Avery. Subscribe for free episodes on Iono FM, Spotify, Player FM, Pocket Casts, or really wherever you choose to get your podcasts.
The views expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm and should not be taken as advice or recommendations. Investec Bank Limited, an authorized financial services provider and registered credit provider.